Stoney Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 1025, 1063. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to Superbook Sports. Live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. So the Senior Bowl is underway. The Titans delegation is there as they continue the draft process. And it is a collaboration between Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel. Anytime you ask anybody who's in charge, they will tell you that it is a collaboration. Is Mike in charge? Collaboration. Is Rand in charge? Collaboration. I don't know. They won't say. And I have told you that I think that that is actually what is happening. That is the way that they have drawn it up, is Amy Adams Strunk has said, I want you guys to get along. And they have said, we promise we'll get along. But I am nervous, and I will tell you, Rand Carthon has done a great job of something that the old GM used to do very, very well. And that was be very cordial, say a lot, make it feel like you told people something, and not tell you anything. And Rand Carthon is good at that. And so we've heard Rand Carthon speak, and we've heard stories from Rand Carthon, and we've heard about his vision, but we really don't know what he's about as a football guy. Yeah, we know he wants a tough team and he believes in running the ball and all those kind of things, but we just don't know. And I keep wondering, that San Francisco structure, what is it about Rand Carthon that made him stand out here? And then I heard Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal talk about how Kyle Shanahan runs the 49ers. You know, I get mad when I see them put John Lynch on TV because John Lynch is not the mastermind behind the 49ers. It is Kyle Shanahan's operation. And Greg Bedard, who used to write for Sports Illustrated, who's been all around, you know, covered the league, covered the Dolphins, covered the Packers, covered the Patriots. Greg Bedard compared Kyle Shanahan and the way he runs San Francisco to another famously successful coach.
Kyle Shanahan does everything there. I mean, people like to say John Lynch is the GM, but it's really Kyle Shanahan makes all the decisions. He is the offensive Bill Belichick of this time.
And I heard that and I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. I don't like the people off the Belichick tree. I don't know what happened, because every time somebody leaves Andy Reid, and there's going to be some branches that aren't so great, like Pat Shermer. But for the most part, when people leave Andy Reid, whether they're personnel guys or whether they're coaches, they seem to have some sort of success. The Packers like this were this way for years. They would lose executives, and those executives would go to other teams, and those executives would be awesome. But almost everybody who's left Bill Belichick has accomplished absolutely nothing without Tom Brady. Bill's the only one who's won a Super Bowl. He did that with Tom Brady 6 times. Jason Light is the only one of Bill Belichick's personnel disciples who's won a Super Bowl. He did that in Tampa 3 years ago with Tom Brady. The best Bill Belichick executive, in my opinion, was Thomas Dimitrov of the Atlanta Falcons. They had that one team over all those years, and they had some good teams in Atlanta, but they had that one team in Atlanta that went to the Super Bowl. Matt Ryan was league MVP, and who was there? Kyle Shanahan. They got to the Super Bowl, they were up 28-3, and they lost. That's the best. The second best, without Tom Brady, I think is John Robinson. There's a lot of guys. Bob Quinn, Nick Caserio, Scott Pioli, Dave Ziegler. There are a lot of guys over the year that have left the Bill Belichick nest who really have struggled from a personnel standpoint. And I worry about Rand Carthon at the 49ers, and I don't mean this in a degrading way, because people will hear me say this and they will think that's what I mean. But I do wonder, what was his role in the 49ers? I've talked to some people behind the scenes. I've talked to some people on the air. The way that it has been made out to me is that Kyle Shanahan is the chief football executive of the 49ers. Just like Pete Carroll is with the Seahawks, Bill Belichick is with the Patriots, so on and so forth. Adam Peters, from what I've been told, is kind of the brains behind the personnel operation. Now, Adam Peters is technically their number three behind John Lynch. But there's a reason why every year there's talk about John Lynch going back to the booth. And every year John Lynch says, no, I like what I'm doing. We like what we're doing. But I think in San Francisco, they view John Lynch as expendable. Adam Peters was going to interview for the two general manager jobs that were open, the Titans and Arizona. And then he pulled out of both of them. Rand Carthon did not. So when I hear that Kyle Shanahan makes every big decision in San Francisco, I think to myself, so is this a new experience for Rand Carthon? Where now, instead of Rand Carthon liking a player, and he can talk to somebody about liking that player, but it doesn't matter because if Kyle Shanahan doesn't like the player, then the 49ers aren't going to draft him. Now he's got state secrets. And there is a give and tell exchange of information that you have got to master at if you're going to be a general manager doing this. John Clayton, Floyd used to always tell me, John Clayton had the best information when he was trying to figure out what other teams are going to do. Well, I know John Clayton loved Floyd, and I love John Clayton, and John Clayton's a great guy. I don't think he was giving up that information for free. There is kind of a give and a take here. And it's different when you're the guy in charge. Remember when the 49ers made the trade for the third overall pick? And for about 3 weeks it was, oh, they're doing this because they love Mac Jones. They want Mac Jones. Mac's their guy. They're going to draft Mac. And then it was, maybe they don't like Mac Jones. Maybe they like Justin Fields. Maybe they like Trey Lance. We don't know. I remember sitting there when they were picking third, not knowing who they were going to take. We knew Trevor Lawrence was going number one. We knew Zach Wilson was going number two. We didn't know. Kyle Shanahan didn't tell people. That's why. He made that decision. Now Rand Carthon is not only in the seat to make the decisions, but he has to collaborate for those decisions. And I think back to where he's coming from in San Francisco and Greg Bedard saying, Kyle Shanahan did everything there. And now I'm like, does he have like what he's going to have to do down? And is what he going to have to do as the general manager of the Titans similar at all to what he's used to in San Francisco? Now, I like Rand Carthon. And I told you guys after his press conference and when he came on the show, the one thing I took away from, he seems like a really, really good guy. And I think this organization needs that because Vrabel can be an a-hole a lot of the time. And I think they're going to need that to balance it out. But this is going to be an adjustment period for Rand Carthon, which to me, absolutely no doubt that this is going to be an adjustment. And we'll see how it goes. But comparing Shanahan's executives, who I think they've lost a couple over the last couple of years, but comparing that to what Rand Carthon's going to be dealing here with the Titans, and looking at how the Belichick tree's worked out when Belichick does everything, it makes me a little nervous. 615-737-1025. We'll get your phones on that. 615-737-1025. Plus, something that doesn't seem very Mike Vrabel-like. We'll get to that. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.
You've been through the first 10, 11 days now with Rand Carthon. What sorts of things have you been working on?
Well, just getting, we have conversations about the roster and, where we see things as coaches and, where the personnel department sees it and, trying to figure out what we're going to do going forward and how we start this process of, free agency and the draft and, it's just working through the roster right now and having conversations.
I bet you're really enjoying it.
No, it's great. It's been, it's trying to bring what they think and what we think as coaches and, having conversations about it and then coming to an agreement that is best for the football team.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel with Mike Keith at the Senior Bowl. God bless Mike Keith. I bet
always
you're enjoying
so
it.
He's always so cheery.
Floyd told me that Mike Keith, no matter what the situation was, he's like, we could lose every game in a row, and it could be the worst day Mike Keith's ever had, and you get the same Mike Keith
every day. I believe
it.
I believe it.
Absolutely. And so, Mike Keith, I bet you're enjoying it. Yeah. Yeah. What if Rabel's like, actually, I think he's a slughead.
This has been the worst.
I think he's the worst. I think he's a slughead. I think he has no idea. So sometimes in life, going outside of your comfort zone is actually what's best for you, even though I know a lot of times people don't want to do it. In fact, 99% of what people do, I believe, is what they're comfortable with. I can't tell you the amount of people that I've known who have gotten laid off from a job, and for about the first month that they're laid off, there's anger and fear about what's next. And then when they get their new job and their life's progressing, it's, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. It happens so many times. Mike Vrabel is going out of his comfort zone. And I think that conversation with Mike Keith right there is an example of it, right? The, what's it been like for 10 or 15 days getting to know Rand Carthon? You know, we're going over the roster and what the personnel department likes and what we like and just getting on the same page and things like that. That's different. That's outside of his comfort zone. I think there are areas of the team that he's now in charge of. I think there are going to be areas of the organization that he's not in charge of going forward. But one thing that I think is abundantly clear is that Amy Adams Strunk is more involved now than she was before. And I believe this could either be bad or this could be very good for Mike Vrabel. And that is, I think there are more cooks in the kitchen and that there are going to be more cooks in the kitchen for Mike Vrabel than he's really ever had to deal with. The way it was previously constructed was Amy Adams Strunk had John Robinson. John Robinson had Mike Vrabel, and Mike Vrabel could do whatever he wanted to with the coaching staff, and Robinson handled a bunch of other stuff. Well, now it's kind of like everybody's in charge of everything. And that could overwhelm Vrabel. Now, maybe the collaboration of what Amy Adams Strunk views as no longer am I going to have my head coach not want to trade A.J. Brown and my general manager want to pull the trigger. I no longer have to deal with my general manager liking Malik Willis and my head coach liking Desmond Ridder. Maybe she views that as the key to success here. And it wouldn't surprise me if behind the scenes Vrabel had said, well, you know, I really just didn't think I could use Radens, and I just, you know, Austin Hooper's not a fit, and all these guys, you know, he's not working out for me, he's not, all these things. But if the Titans go out and add Matt Nagy, as is the rumor, if they go add him as the offensive coordinator, he's going to run his offense, and he's going to run it his way. And that's going to be a situation where Mike Vrabel has another cook in the kitchen. Here's Rand Carthon, who no longer Vrabel reports to, but works with. And some people would say, that'll be easier for Vrabel. But in reality, it may actually be tougher because now he's got responsibility. It's not just a, I tell the general manager what I like and then on we go. It's a, I'm responsible. My ass is on the line here. And I don't know how Vrabel's going to handle all of this. One thing that I think is abundantly clear is in the past, Mike Vrabel has avoided having to become reactive based upon results. Shane Bowen oversaw a horrendous defense in 2020. Vrabel didn't fire him. He promoted him. This past year, that wasn't going to fly. The offensive coordinator who Vrabel protected last year, out. The offensive line coach who Vrabel vouched for in 2019, out. The secondary coach who Vrabel hired, who he worked with in Houston after having the 32nd ranked pass defense, out. This is a different move for Mike Vrabel. That's why when I hear Tim Hasselbeck talk so firmly about how he thinks that the next offensive coordinator of the Titans is going to be Matt Nagy, there is a part of me that says, boy, that's not like Vrabel. Normally, Vrabel only wants to hire guys he knows. Normally, Vrabel only wants to add guys that have connections with him at Ohio State or with the Texans or someone. He's never worked with Matt Nagy. That's a totally different scheme. And I'm thinking that Mike Vrabel has been pushed in that direction. So the comfort of what Mike Vrabel has done for 5 years, that's over. It's totally different. And sometimes being pushed outside of our comfort zone actually makes us better. And sometimes it reveals our flaws. This is going to be a very fascinating process because, again, Rand Carthon and Vrabel, as we have been led to believe, are on equal footing. But Rand Carthon didn't lose 7 games in a row to end last season. If the team doesn't perform well, it'll be real easy to say, well, I got him the players he wanted, and we're not winning. That's going to be tough. 615-737-1025. And our phone lines, of course, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Texter says, Jared, is it possible that one of the deciding factors of hiring Rand Carthon was the potential to get one of the 49er quarterbacks? Well, it doesn't sound like. It sounds like, unlike the Titans, who anytime you ask them a question, you committed to Tannehill? I don't know. We'll have to see if he ever recovers from his sprained ankle. Apparently, if you ask Kyle Shanahan, are you bringing back Trey Lance? Yes. Are you bringing back Brock Purdy? Yes. Are you bringing back Jimmy Garoppolo? No. Apparently, they've been abundantly clear with what their plans are. They're going to go with Purdy and with Lance, which the Purdy injury allows them to have both guys on the roster, in my opinion, and they've said Jimmy's out. So if you think Rand Carthon's bringing one of the 49er quarterbacks with him, it's Jimmy G. And what have we learned about the Titans bringing in Jimmy G, Ian?
No, no, no.
No, 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 no. We are not doing that. We have already told the Titans that that is not an option. We don't do that very often, but we have told the Titans directly on this program that Jimmy Garoppolo is to not be the quarterback of the Titans. Jason Fitz, he, like me, thought Tom Brady was coming to the Titans. And now he's not. Where do they go from here? We'll discuss with Fitz, and we'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063, The Game. It is Love Week that is upcoming with Robbie and Joe. That's right. I know everybody feels that way about Love Week. And you've got the opportunity to get it done. Brought to you by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs. Tune into Robbie and Retro tomorrow morning between 6 and 9 for details on how you could win a $100 gift card to A Moment's Peace Day Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs and qualify for a chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Depending on if Derek Carr is a free agent or not, if Derek Carr is not a free agent, if he gets traded, Garoppolo might be the top. I mean, he's a starter. He's got plenty of experience. He's took a team to a Super Bowl. It's not going to be like crazy, crazy, crazy expensive. I think he'll be really attractive, and I do think he'll be a starter. And I think, you know, there's some other guys that I wonder about too, like, will Baker be a starter? Will Minshew be a starter?
Nope.
Will Tannehill be a starter if the Titans do something with him? Like, there's, it's a good class. I wouldn't say it's like the greatest class ever, but it is a good one.
So if Tannehill is out at Tennessee, that would mean Willis is in?
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, now I would say let's play it forward a little bit. Let's say Tannehill, they do decide to trade him or cut him, or I don't even know. They decide he's not a starter. Rand Carthon is their new GM. He came from San Francisco.
Trey Lance.
Oh, right. No, I don't think so. But Jimmy G might be
possible. Jimmy G in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wrong game. Sweet. He loves wrong
could
game.
You imagine him in Nashville? I could, actually.
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean?
No, 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 no. I am not interested in Jimmy Garoppolo. Why? For starters, because Jimmy Garoppolo freaking sucks. That is the number one reason. Boy, I enjoyed it a lot more last week when I thought the Titans might go out there and sign Tom Brady. No, 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 no. Ian Rappaport, do not say that. And then people will say, well, Ian Rappaport said, no, 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 no. Not interested in Jimmy Garoppolo. Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, joins us on the program. Fitz, last week you thought the Titans were going to sign Tom Brady. So did I. Now he's out. So where do the Titans go from here?
Nowhere. I mean, I honestly, like, I think we have to acknowledge right now, and I just heard the clip you were playing, but, you know, I think Bill Barnwell put up the article today, like the 13 most appealing destinations for Rodgers and Derek Carr. And the fact is there are 13 destinations right now. There aren't any good like, you've got Derek Carr and Jimmy G are going to be your only two options, I think. So, you know, unless you think the Titans are going to try and put together a package and trade for Derek Carr, I know the Raiders are still trying to figure out a way to actually force that trade instead of just cutting him. But, I mean, Derek Carr is going to be the top quarterback on the market with a ton of options. Other than that, you got the option of Jimmy G or basically run it back and wait. See what you can get in the draft or run it back and wait. And it reminds me, you know, my Raiders fan, but something that Dave Ziegler said last year that really stuck in my head. He was sort of critiqued for not ever going out and fixing the offensive line during the offseason. And he said, look, we all knew that we had needs, but I still have to look at the market and decide what the price of filling those needs are. And if the price is too high, I'm not going to pay it. I think right now you're going to have a bunch of substandard quarterbacks that you're not willing to pay for, so you might as well just roll the dice with who's in-house and see what you can figure out. Like, I just don't think there's an easy answer.
Okay, then I'll run it to you like this. You tell me what you rather have, $27 million Tannehill, and forget about the cap because you know that the cap's fake. So that's the amount of money you'll have to pay Tannehill is $27 million. $27 million for Ryan Tannehill or Baker Mayfield at 15.
$27 million for Tannehill.
Okay.
Also, 27 is not that bad. I mean, considering Justin Herbert's about to join the $50 million a year club, 27 is a reasonable price.
Oh, we had TD in here in the last hour, and I was talking about how I think the Titans, because they've been so lukewarm on Tannehill, I think they're going to try to leverage him to take a pay cut. And they're going to say it's for the cap, but it's really that they're not going to want to pay him $27 million. But $27 million is a bargain for Tannehill. When the going rate for an average starter is 42, I mean, I think that that's a bargain at $27 million for Tannehill. Okay, $27 million for Tannehill, or package the 11th pick with your first next year and get one of the three quarterbacks in the draft.
I don't know that 11 and 1 will move you up high enough to get one of the, honestly. Like, I mean, I think right now, if you're the Raiders, you're trying to move up from 7 to get one of the top three in the draft. And, you know, what little I've heard on that already, because we're very early in the speculation, is that they would have to give up this year's one, maybe two others, and a second is what the going rate is right now that's being asked for by Chicago. They're asking for a king's ransom. So if you're looking across the board, I don't know that will be enough to move you up. You know, I mean, if you can move up, you do move up. So that's a great solution. If you can't move up, you do move up. I just think it's going to cost more than that.
So I don't think – I'm not talking about moving up to 1, but I'm talking about moving up to, like, 6 and getting the third guy, a la Andy Reid moving up and the Bills moving up in 17 and 18, and they didn't get the first quarterback off the board. They got the second or third quarterback off the board, but they landed Mahomes or Allen.
I think this is one of the rare years where I genuinely right now think three quarterbacks are going to go in the top 5. That's my very early draft prediction. There's so much competition to get ahead of Indianapolis. I think that three quarterbacks go in the top 5. Everybody's going to be trying to get ahead of Indy no matter what it takes. So, because we know Indy's going to take one of the quarterbacks. So, you know, I think we're in a rare year where you could have the 5th pick and get the best player. You know, that's what's wild, because the run on quarterbacks is going to go high. If you think you can run up to 6, and still get one of the top three, then, yeah, I would do that if I was the Titans in a heartbeat.
So TD and I were talking about this. You know, the TV people probably don't think that Ryan Tannehill would be attractive to other teams, but given the 13 openings, if Tannehill was out there, I think somebody would want him to be their quarterback next year. Your thoughts?
100%. No, there's certainly a market for Tannehill. I wouldn't dispute that even for a second. Yes, I think there's definitely a market. Like, if you're a team like the Jets and you're looking around this year – and you can't get to Derek Carr, you'd much rather have Ryan Tannehill than have Jimmy G. There's no doubt about that. So, you know, yes, there would absolutely be a market right now, I think, for Ryan Tannehill.
Jason Fitz is our guest, ESPN Radio. Fitz, I'm going to guess when you're at ESPN and you're talking to people on the record, and maybe even sometimes off the record in the hallways at ESPN, there's a, I think, sometimes, and there's a, I'm telling you sometimes, right?
Right, of course, yeah.
Okay, I want you to hear what Tim Hasselbeck said on our midday show. Was this Tuesday, Ian? Tuesday. Tim Hasselbeck said this on the midday show Tuesday about the Titans' offensive coordinator position. You tell me how you interpret it.
I think I said this to you guys maybe before it became.
Hold on. I heard that in one of my ears, but I didn't hear that in both.
I think
ears.
I said this to you guys maybe before it became, I don't know, maybe before it was public. Like, look, I think it's Matt Nagy. I think the only reason that it's not already Matt Nagy is because the Chiefs are still playing. Like, now, I don't know that. I'm not reporting that. That's just what I feel has happened. And so I think that's the, like, to me, if Kansas City weren't still playing, I feel like it would have been done by now. And I think it's one of these things where it's like, we're not going to go hire someone else because, look, Matt Nagy's not rumored to be getting one of these head coaching jobs that's open. We feel like it's pretty good that it's happening here. And so ultimately, we're just not announcing it now. It's distracting to the Chiefs. Really doesn't matter if we announce it now or we announce it later or we officially decide later. I feel like it's Matt Nagy.
Fitz, do you think that he is telling us or do you think he is opining?
Man, that feels a lot like telling to me. I mean, that feels a lot like telling. I don't know what his relationship is with Matt specifically, but man, that feels like he's saying, this is what I'm hearing, but I can't say I'm hearing it because I can't say I'm hearing it, but I'm definitely hearing it. Like, yeah, that feels like that's what he's saying. And by the way, that'd be a home run. I mean, Matt Nagy
really?
Would be a home run hire.
So I was going to ask you, you know, Matt Nagy, do you look at him as good coordinator, bad head coach, or do you look at him as a total bozo?
No, good coordinator, bad head coach, for sure. And somebody that sort of got lost in the weeds as a head coach. Like, a couple of people, you know, obviously working with Sarah Spain, who knows so many people in Chicago and talking to some of the people there. A lot of people felt like he started off on the right foot, obviously, but just sort of got lost in the weeds of it, as weird as that sounds. Like, sometimes coaches get lost in the minutia of being a head coach, and I think he's one of those. So I don't think Matt Nagy is done as a head coach in the NFL. I just think he sort of spiraled. He got lost in the whirlwind of that, but still a very, very good offensive coordinator and somebody that I think is capable of coaching decent quarterback play. So, you know, obviously it didn't work, and I'm not saying he's super flexible in what he does, but I think he's a good hire for sure.
How do we know, Fitzy, that Matt Nagy is a good coordinator when all of his coordinating outside of his 4 years in Chicago were done with Andy Reid?
Yeah, and we don't. You know, that's a very fair point with Andy Reid. Andy is definitely one that gives his coaches a ton of autonomy. He gives them a ton of ownership and all of it. But, yeah, we certainly live in a world where I think that's on people's minds, and it comes up in the Eric Bieniemy conversation all the time. Like, how much of this is Eric Bieniemy's offense? You know, obviously that's part of it. I would say that while we don't know necessarily what his play calling in game is like away from Andy Reid, we do know that development is something that, you know, Andy Reid is still a head coach focusing on an entire football team. So, you know, when you look at the way Kansas City still currently develops players offensively, it's really a special thing to watch. So I think the developmental portion of his coaching is pretty unquestionable because he's been a part of great development. Now, what that means for his actual, you know, ability to call games, we'll find out. But I think he's a capable coach.
Jason Fitz is with us. Where does Aaron Rodgers end up?
Green Bay. I look, everybody thinks Green Bay's going somewhere else, but I think Green Bay got the ultimate ammunition because of Tom Brady's retirement. Like, if you think the only fear that Green Bay could have in all of this is that they sort of hold the line and Aaron Rodgers would retire, which would cause salary cap hell for them as well. You know, that the worst situations for them is a trade before June 1st or a cut or a retirement. Those things all hurt their salary cap situation. I think right now, if you're Green Bay, you know that there's absolutely zero chance that Aaron Rodgers is going to retire and go into the Hall of Fame the same year as Tom Brady. He's not going to go in his year as the second-best quarterback. So if you're playing chicken with a quarterback in negotiation, you just got the ultimate, okay, big boy, you don't want to play here. You can just retire. You think he's going to do that? I don't. I don't think there's any chance he wants to go into Canton as the second-best quarterback and maybe third-best player in his own Hall of Fame class. I don't think there's any chance that ego will do that.
That is so petty. Fitz, I have one last thing for you, and honestly, I'm just doing this because I want to get this off my chest, and I know you have to talk a lot of basketball at ESPN because ESPN pumps basketball, and I do not think that there is a market for as much basketball as you all pump, but it's more so even college basketball. Fitz, It's like watching paint dry. I mean, I tried watching college basketball last night. Tennessee was playing Florida, and I watched Tennessee play Texas the other night. I mean, is it me or is it the sport? And then I flip on an NBA game, and it drives me crazy that all these great uniforms that are iconic, like the Celtics, home whites, and they all wear these stupid uniforms now. And I just, honestly, I get so bored watching basketball, college and pro. Is it me or has basketball fallen off?
I think my interest in college basketball, like, you know, frankly, I'm always real with you, man. Like, they offered me the chance to host our digital college game day basketball show, or the chance to host an XFL show every week on digital, and I chose the XFL. and I really like college basketball. I've always have liked college basketball. I've done that college basketball show 3 years in a row. But for me right now, it's just not particularly interesting. So, like, college basketball is not as interesting as it has been in years past. I would rather, you know, have some fun around a new product with the XFL and just see what that's all about and try something different. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't know that I share your opinion necessarily on the NBA, but
oh,
I think part of the NBA
is so boring. Oh, my God, Fitz.
I think part of that is just, A, it's you know, where consumerism is. Like I say all the time, we open every single Snapchat SportsCenter show with the NBA because kids 13 to 24, they will consume so many NBA highlights that it literally will make 10 times the money for us on digital platforms that the NFL will. Like, that is just proven fact. So there's a whole audience to the NBA. It's just the problem with the NBA, I think, for a lot of us now is we've devalued everything to championships or nothing else matters. So how do you make a game? The same thing that, frankly, I think hockey deals with sometimes. How do you make a game in the middle of February matter to people that are casual fans when realistically that game isn't going to matter in the final standings? Like, that's a hard sell for everybody.
My problem with basketball, with the NBA, is I don't think the players care during the regular season.
I agree. I don't disagree with that. I think they rarely, when they have a big matchup in a big arena versus a big person, they might care. But yeah, like, you know, I don't think that most nights everybody's out there like, live or die, oh my God, I must win this game. I think that's just become part of the NBA culture.
Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio. I really wasn't even thinking about going there, but I saw basketball on the TV, and I wanted to get that off my chest. Fitz, great stuff. Appreciate you. We'll see you.
Appreciate you, brother.
Yep, Jason Fitz, as always, joining us on the program. I think I might just hate basketball now. I hate basketball.
I do enjoy still kind of watching some college basketball.
I can't do it.
I mean, the NBA, I struggle with the NBA.
I
think it's so cool watching them, you know, like Ja do his thing and those levitation dunks and all that stuff. And I guess I see why the Snapchat highlights are, you know, fun to watch, because some of the highlights that those guys put out are pretty legit.
So I think that's a skewed. I didn't want to call Fitz out on this because I'm not 100% sure that this is still the case. But I think Fitz used that argument before one time, and Caroline told me, who obviously was, you know, part of ESPN's digital team. Caroline told me that they don't have the rights to NFL highlights. So, like, when they do an NFL thing on digital,
I see,
it's like a still picture, but that when it's NBA, it's like, here's the dunk! LeBron dunked it and then didn't play for three games! You know, that
yeah,
kind of thing.
But, I get the offense is what's fun in the NBA and all that stuff, but it's just back and forth, chuck a three in like 5 seconds and back the other way.
Oh, it sucks. And the uniforms.
It's tough.
They wear the stupidest uniforms in the NBA nowadays.
Yeah, I'm not a huge uniform guy either way. That's, you know, I could do with or without any type of crazy uniforms.
Right, like I like really, the traditional, like Chicago Bulls.
Doesn't really bother me
white
either way.
With the red letters, you know, not this extra bull crap that they wear. It's like every team's got to wear some kind of stupid. They just showed the Lakers, and the Lakers are on the road wearing these white jerseys with these purple. I don't know what the hell, where do they come up with this stuff? I mean, it's, God, I hate basketball. Okay, I felt like an old curmudgeon there, but I did want to get that off my chest. 615-737-1025. We're back to your wonderful phone calls next. Stoneman & Company, 1025-106 to the game.
The culture, like, they're done with dealing with veteran quarterbacks who come in and just don't fit the bill. Mm. They have a great roster. They do. A great roster on both sides of the ball. They have a run game. They have a solid defense. They need to get that quarterback. And so why wouldn't you pick from 4 to 1? Move up, whatever it takes. Like, next year's 2, next year's 1. go get that guy. I would make it Bryce Young. Maybe it's C.J. Stroud for you or Will Levis, whatever you want to say. But my point is, I think that number one pick is going to be worth a lot.
Why would you not do that? I don't know, because maybe that guy will suck like Zach Wilson sucks. I don't know. That's Todd McShay. Fitz just said for the Raiders to move from 7 to number 1 with Chicago, it would be 3 first-round picks and a second-round pick. No thank you. It's not like that pick is Trevor Lawrence or Joe Burrow. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Weston is up next on the Titans. What's up, Weston?
Hey, Jared. I just wanted to get your thoughts on possibly the Titans moving in a different direction, except for quarterbacks. So, looking at Tom Brady retiring, you know Tampa Bay can't keep all the players together. So, maybe a third-round, fourth-round pick and go get Mike Evans and keep your second and first-rounders and act the offensive line together.
Time out. You want to give up a third-round pick for Mike Evans?
Yes.
And you think they'll do that?
I mean, it's a very legitimate option because he's been in the league a while and he's kind of getting older. So
I don't know why the Titans don't offer Dennis Daly in exchange for Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, if it's a third round pick for Weston, I love you, baby. Thank you for your call. I love you, but no, they're not going a third round pick for Mike Evans.
I think Mike Evans might make the Hall of Fame.
I mean, what are we talking about?
And they probably asked for a little bit more.
Round pick. I mean, I keep thinking back to this. The Eagles had 2 first round picks last year. They started the year with 3 because I think they had 1 for Carson Wentz and they traded down, I think, with the Devontae Smith pick. I think they traded down that year. So they had 3 first-round picks last year, and then they traded 1 to the Saints, so they got the Saints' first-round pick this year. But with those 3 first-round picks in last year's draft, they trade one away, they have 2. They had the 13th overall pick and the 18th overall pick, and they took Jordan Davis with the 13th overall pick. Well, I am sure that A.J. Brown trade was contingent upon Treylon Burks or whomever the Titans wanted being available at 18 overall. They were not going to trade the 13th pick for A.J. Brown. They traded the 18th pick? Think about that. And I don't think that's enough. I think in hindsight, the Titans should have gotten more in exchange for A.J. Brown. When we were starting off on talking about trading A.J. Brown, it was the Jets with the 10th overall pick that we started talking about. Not 18. And he wants to give up a third-round pick for Mike Evans. Wow, that's a take. I mean, to your point, he may go to the Hall of Fame. Mike Evans is like a top 8 receiver in the NFL.
Well, his numbers, you know, I don't really know, you know, all the things that you need for the Hall of Fame. But, I mean, just strictly numbers, over the past however many years that Mike Evans has been in the league with Brady, without Brady, the touchdowns, the yardage, I mean, he's up there in those stat categories. So he hasn't done all the winning, but.
So somebody sent in a text that I actually think a text they sent into the midday show is actually more interesting than the text they sent into us. I wonder if Caroline read this on the air or not. I don't know that I did not. I heard the beginning of Elliot Friedman on with them, but I didn't hear the whole Elliot Friedman interview.
I didn't hear the whole thing.
Apparently, again, this was a text that was sent at 1:34 today. Joel says, Elliot Friedman says the NHL needs more hot take announcers. I can't imagine a booth with Willie, Chris Mason, and Stillman.
Interesting.
What would you think about me doing Preds games?
They were talking about ratings.
Oh, how the TV ratings are down?
Yeah.
And he says they need more hot take announcers?
And then they started talking. I don't know if necessarily, maybe he did mention something about that, like the Barkley situation, you know, in like TNT.
Sure.
And how they kind of do stuff. And someone called in, I think it was Nate, actually called in and asked, you know, what they're going to do with the future because of Bally and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, it's going to be an unmitigated disaster for hockey.
So they were just kind of discussing different scenarios.
And basketball.
Yeah. They were just going over, you know, just the landscape in general about TV stuff.
I mean, the hot take announcers is never going to happen. And I'm going to tell you why. Because
if they're If they work for the team, that's the thing.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
The whole point of, you know, I think sports fans want this. If you go back and you watch a broadcast on YouTube from 1980-something, you will hear these color analysts rip these players apart. And I think sports fans, the number one thing sports fans want from their analysts is who screwed up and why. Or who's great. That's what they want. Who screwed up? And Troy Aikman will tell you who screwed up. Some of these other guys, you know, it's, oh man, the Eagles, what a great game. They grinded it out against this great 49er team. 49ers didn't have a quarterback talking about. But when you work for the team, they're never going to put somebody on the broadcast that says, yeah, Jacobs really sucks. And then the guy's going to go hop on the plane and fly with Jacobs to Denver. It's not going to happen. So, I mean, they can come up with what to do. Could you imagine if they let me call the Predators games, though? Like, if they let me call it like the way I want to call it. Like, the way that I tweet about it.
Trying to imagine.
When there's a big game. Now, I couldn't do every game. That's too many games. I could do...
Would the all text, the all caps tweets, would that be yelling in the booth, do you think?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, Willie would be saying something. Give me a play-by-play call. Give me a play-by-play call of another team scoring. And I will have a reaction, because the thing that's tough is that it's different, right? Like, there's always this talk of, you know, oh, well, we want announcers to do this or we want announcers to do that. But normally you need the announcer to hush while the play-by-play guy is calling the game. And I'm not sure I could do that because I am emotional when I watch sports. And so, do we have a Predators goal? Okay.
It's hockey. It's basketball.
Okay. Out front, Mitchell. Long three. Good! Oh, my! He hit it from Painesville. Timeout, Clippers. 11-4. Donovan buries a deep three.
Where the hell is Painesville?
Painesville is Ohio. I was actually born in Painesville Hospital. Painesville, what? Ohio, randomly.
Birthplace of Ian. Way to go. That's the kind of stuff you get from me on the broadcast. 615-737-1025. There is a favorite in the clubhouse for the Titans Titans offensive coordinator position as of right now. And there are some pros and some cons that we need to go over, and we'll do that next. Stillman and Company, 1025, 106 through the game.